Hello and welcome to the Groovy Calamari podcast. I am your host, Sergio Del Amo. What's Groovy Calamari? Groovy Calamari is a free curated publication of interesting links about the Micronaut and the Groovy ecosystem, Grails, Gradle, microservices and related topics. Basically anything I am currently working on. Created by yours truly and published weekly. The Groovy Calamari podcast covers similar topics but in a different format. Today I am joined by Andres Almire. Hello, Andres.
Hi, Sergio. How are you?
Very well, very well. Where are you based, Andres?
So I'm currently based in Basel, Switzerland, which is located right in the corner of Switzerland, France, and Germany.
Do you speak German there?
Ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch.
Ein bisschen Deutsch. Wunderbar.
Yes, this is a German-speaking area.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. But you are originally from Mexico, right?
That is correct.
So what's the story? How does a guy from Mexico end up in Switzerland? Because I think you have been living in Switzerland for many years already, right?
It's been close to 9 years now. But the thing is that, I was living in Mexico and working there for quite some time, and an opportunity came to work for Oracle. So I moved to the U.S. in California. I actually work at Oracle in the headquarters in Redwood Shores for 2 years and a half or so. And then I took an opportunity to work for a Swiss company in 2010. And I remained with this company, Canoe Engineering, for 8 years. And then I decided to change paths. And now I'm working for Gradling since the beginning of January.
Yeah, congratulations. I saw you joined the Gradle team. That's great news.
Yeah, that is correct. I'm now a developer advocate as part of the developer experience team here inside Gradle.
Cool thing, cool thing. Are you working remotely, right?
I'm surprised that, the company is medium-sized, I would say, and most people work remotely. We have members all across the globe, spanning from the east side of Australia to the west coast in the U.S.
Luke Daly is based in Australia, right?
Yes, he is.
That's cool, that's cool. So a lot of slack, I imagine.
Yes, there's plenty of asynchronous communication going on with all team members.
Yeah, yeah. We are working remotely also. My department at OCI. It has some challenges. We have also Paul King working from Australia. So Australia and Spain is like the worst nightmare for timetables. So I think I have seen him twice in Slack. Collected or something like that. Yeah. Were you working for Oracle when they had already acquired the Java rights, or was that before Java?
No, actually, that's the funny thing. So I joined, I think, when was it? October 2007, I believe. I joined the J developer team. The idea that, you have to use in case that you want to make the most out of Oracle-based technologies. And I let go of Oracle in March 2010, so 1 month before the acquisition of Sun was finalized.
Yeah, it's strange being the Java person that you are.
So the funny thing is that, I saw some of my colleagues and some friends that, used to work at Sun, and they were a little bit nervous and hesitant on joining Oracle. In the end, some of them decided to go away, to join other companies, and others were just staying in Oracle. And for the most part, I think that all of them are happy with what they do right now. They probably wish that Sun were still alive, the way that the two companies behave. It's different, but at some point, everybody made it work in some way or another.
Yeah. Sam was quite an innovator. It's quite unfortunate, at the end. So you were at that time that you were working in Oracle, were you working mostly with Java, I guess? When did you became involved with the Groovy ecosystem?
That was 2 years before I joined Oracle. I was still working in Mexico. Funny thing is that I went to a conference in the U.S. in Austin, Texas, and I remember it was July 4th to July 6th on a weekend. And I went there because I wanted to learn more about unit testing and other Java-related technologies. But something strange happened is that at least half of the content for this conference was Ruby-based.
Yeah. What
And
conference was that?
this was a stop of the Knopfloch Just Dev tour
Okay.
in Austin. It was called the Lone Star Symposium. And at this point, most of the speakers were talking about Ruby. And only a handful of them would talk about Groovy, which in this point in time it was posed as the Ruby version of Java, even though there was already a JRuby version already going on. And that's the thing. I found Ruby to be very, very interesting and very fast to do things, and I really wanted to make use of it. So I immediately had a look at JRuby, but the integration with the Java tools wasn't really good at the time, and I was using Maven extensively, and I didn't want to go back to end. And so that didn't work for me. So I found Groovy, which ran on the JVM much easier than the alternatives. And the Maven support was still flaky, but much better than JRuby. And of course, you can make anything wrong with AND if you were really desperate. And so that was in, as I said, July 2006. And since I started going with Groovy, I never looked back.
Yeah, I saw. You are an Apache Groovy committer, right?
Yes, I think it was late 2007 when I officially joined the Groovy development team as part of the a subgroup called the Swing Developer Team. There were three of us: Dan O'Ferry, James Williams, and myself. We took care of the Swing Builder and the Groovy console and a few other things that were desktop related from the core Groovy distribution. And then, well, of course, Codehouse went away and Groovy moved to Apache, and I continued to be a contributor to the Groovy project. And I believe it was last year, I also became part of the program chair.
Awesome. So since 2007, that's amazing. So what you said is, so at that point you were already interested in desktop application building. So right,
Yeah,
because you were doing
definitely.
the Swing module. You see that as the natural part of our Griffon?
Well, yes, exactly. So I was involved in a huge, huge development in 2004, starting in 2004, and that lasted around 2006, that had a desktop component and a server-side component. And for the server side, we had a mixture of a Struts and a Spring. Spring was still emerging, and then Struts was king. But we didn't have any framework for the desktop side. So we had in our own Craptaculous framework inspired by both Spring and Struts to make desktop development work much easier. And everything was Java-based and XML as well. And it worked, but it wasn't the best thing that it could be. And so once I left this company early 2006, and then I later discovered Groovy, I thought that maybe Groovy will give us the will be the key to have to write a tool or to write a framework that will allow you to write any kind of desktop application targeting Swing. And that's how the idea of Griffon came to be. And at some point later, I think it was in Java 1 2008, the three of us met with Guillaume Laforge, and we decided to hatch a plan. And what Dan did was fork the at that time the Grails 1.1 code base, remove everything that had to do with HTTP and servlet, and put Swing on top of it, and that was Griffon 0.0, released in September 10 of 2008. And then we started to move very quickly to add more features and to move a little bit away from what is the standard Grails into what will be Griffon proper.
So Griffon is griffon-framework.org. So it's an open source framework for building desktop applications.
Yes.
Because we started talking, I introduced Griffon without really explaining what it was. You wrote a book about Griffon as well, right?
Yes. So as I mentioned, the framework was officially born very late in 2008, and a few months later, in 2009, we got a contract with Manning to write a book, Griffin in Action,
Yeah, I bought the
which,
book.
yeah, th thank you. It took us a much longer than we thought to finalize the book. We unveiled the final version in GreatConf Copenhagen, GreatConf Europe, in 2012. And the reason being is that we were still updating the framework with some really core features. And that didn't make sense for us to write a chapter on a particular feature that we know was going to change completely. So we waited and waited and waited until we couldn't wait anymore, and then we finalized the book.
Yeah, technology books are always challenging because, yeah, the technology really moves behind your feet. I bought the book because I wrote a Griffin application back then for a client. Yeah, it worked. We had it in production and client was happy, and that's the last thing I know. So yeah, I think if anyone wants to build desktop application. Okay, actually, Griffon has changed a lot since that time, right? So the Griffon from today is completely different from the Griffon back then. So the similarities to Grails are long gone, right?
There's still something there. So the first version of Griffin was very close to Grails in the sense that it had its own custom command line, just like Grails did. It had a custom plugin port and a plugin format, just like Grails did. But it was a completely its own code base. The plugin dependency resolution mechanism was, in my mind, of course, I'm biased, it was much better than Grails. We were able to really craft our own mechanism. And we were able to support different JVM languages and different UI toolkits. So we started with Swing, but of course, JavaFX was already becoming popular. So we supported that one as well. And of course, you cannot talk about desktop without mentioning SWT at some point. And there were three other toolkits that we supported: Apache Pivot, Lanterna, which is kind of like a character displaying. If you remember end courses from Unix, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. And GTK, which only works perfectly well on Unix or Linux. In terms of JVM languages, of course, Groovy was the first one, but it goes without saying that you could write Griffin applications with Java or a mixture of Java and Groovy, and then we added more languages like Scala because it was hype, and Clojure, and Mira, and Python, and JRuby. So we wanted the framework to be your one stop for writing all kinds of desktop applications, regardless of the JVM language or the UI toolkit. And for a while, everything worked well, but we figured out that there were some people that did not like Groovy for whatever reason. And despite the great advantages of the framework, they will simply not use it. And there was also some concerns of memory usages and in terms of the distribution size. The Groovy binary was, I believe, close to megabytes, and then you start adding plugins and more things, and then you end up with a very big application for something that is supposed to be small. So we reworked the framework. We let go of the idea of having a custom command line, and we embrace Gradle or Maven. So this was great, given that no longer we needed a custom Griffin plugin for IDEs. You can use whatever plugin is supported for the builder of choice. We reworked the core to be 100% Java, and we added Groovy support as a plugin. And we reworked all the UI toolkit support also as proper plugins. So now we have a much better abstraction layer so that if the time comes and there is a new UI toolkit that must be supported, then we can do so. Or there is a new JVM language, then we can also support it very easily. Which I believe this is the same idea. We copied this idea from Ratpack, and this is the same idea that Micronaut is now using.
Yeah, I think relying on a build tool, it will make basically your life much easier, because you will get, like as you said, IDE support out of the box, and that's great. So right now you can build. What's king index in desktop development? Is JavaX or
Well,
JavaFX
JavaFX
or
is, JavaFX is more popular now than Swing. For some years now, Swing has been in maintenance mode. There have only been a handful of features added in the last releases, and there's mostly bug fixes. Whereas in JavaFX, there have been lots and lots of features that have been added, but it has also reached a maturity level where Oracle announced March of last year, 2018, that they will no longer add JavaFX as part of JDK releases or Oracle JDK releases. This was shocking for some people. They thought that Oracle was dropping the ball again and then just letting it go. But the community has stepped over, and there have been now more contributions and more committers since the JavaFX has a mirror on GitHub. And the fact that JavaFX since JDK 11 or Oracle JDK 11, as a matter of fact, does no longer come bundled just levels the play field, because anybody using OpenJDK distribution since JDK 7 had to have an external download of JavaFX binaries. But that was not the case with Oracle. It was just the fact that it was convenient to put all the binaries together. But now, since 11, everybody's at the same level. You can even consume the JavaFX libraries and binaries from Maven Central. So it turns out that it's now much, much easier for everybody to mix and match JavaFX.
Were you using Griffon by the time you were working in Canoe for client projects?
Yes, we actually put into production a handful of projects that use Griffon. Of course, there's nothing that I can talk about these ones. None of them were open source or publicly visible.
Yeah.
But we have, I think it was three or four different projects that lasted for 5 years now, overall. And they had a mixture of Java-based technologies and gRPC, Spring, Hibernate, you name it. It was all over the place.
Yeah, I assume there are now a lot of desktop applications which do like a mix of networking communication and also like communicating with internal systems. I see the use cases. I know there is it's not so like desktop developer is not as hype as other like mobile phone developer or even web developer, but I know there are use cases and I know there are many people using that. If anyone wanted to learn about developing desktop applications with Griffon, which will be the recommended way to go?
The main website, so griffon-framework.org, link to the guided version, and this should be your first stop up. It contains links to all the plugins that we in the Griffon team maintain, and links to the Java doc and the beautiful source, beautify sources. So everything that you need should start there. We have a main list. We had a Gitter channel. We also have a Twitter account, which sadly is not at Griffon. It was already taken. We had to take the next option, which is at the Aviary. And so there are many options for people to reach out to us and talk to us in case that they get stuck for whatever reason.
Yeah, I have here in front of me the user guide. So that's a big user guide. So I think so do you think it makes sense to start with the user guide? The book is like too old to start with the book or?
The thing is that as I mentioned, Griffon 2, it's a rewrite of the framework, and we try to keep the two versions, 1 and 2, behavior pattern for most of the cases. But the implementation-wise, they're different. There are classes that have the same name, but have been moved to different packages. There are also new classes that did not exist before. So if you start reading the book, you will get some understanding of the ideas behind the framework, but all the code examples will probably no longer work. So if you try to do copy and paste and use it with Griffon 2, you might encounter some trouble. Also, installing plugins is completely different now. I would recommend, if you have access to the book, definitely read it. If not, then get started with the guide. And there are also a couple of tutorials and sample applications that are linked from the website that will should allow anybody to get started very quickly.
Yeah, I will include a link in the show notes. Are you working in Griffon alone, or are you working with more people?
The team is comprised of three or four people now, but I am the one that does mostly the bulk of the development.
How do you manage to? Are you yourself maintaining any desktop applications? Personally, how do
Yes.
you manage to keep the interest in desktop app development?
Yeah, well, for a while, we used to have the applications that the customers from Canoe required, and that's how we find out that there were some issues and there were some missing features, and we kept adding them. And after I left, I had the chance to work on another co-project that also made use of Gryphon. And in this case, we were not able to use Gorilla as a build tool; we had to use Maven. And that prompted us that we were missing the Maven archetypes. Somebody really wanted to create applications completely using the Maven way. So instead of using lazybones, which is the recommended way to bootstrap applications, well, we had to support Maven archetypes in some way. So we did it. And I still keep a set of sample applications that are refreshed constantly, every so often, every 2 to 3 weeks, to figure out if there is something that needs to be done. And if I found something that is no longer working correctly or something that needs to be fixed, then I just get hands down on the code and then try to make a release whenever it makes sense.
So now the next step is to build like an intranet application for Gradle
Well,
Link.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Okay, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's awesome. Congratulations for the project. I know the project, a project for 10 years is amazing. And I know, the framework is really alive, really well maintained with many, many different. I think you can develop a Gryphon applications with Kotlin as well. So,
Yes. It's one of the supported
it's
languages.
build agnostic, language agnostic. Basically anything you need to build desktop applications without leaving your favorite JVM tools. That's Gryphon. So you mentioned your time in Canoe. I used to joke that. At that time in Canoe, there was like the biggest concentration of Groovy talent. Who was working in Canoe when you were working? It was Jochen as well, and
So related to the Groovy community, Jochen and Dirk Koenig, the author of Groovy in Action, for a while, but he left 5 years ago. We had Hamlet Darcy, which was also acting in the Groovy community, coming from Minneapolis, and he has also contributed to Groovy in Action in second edition. We have three other people that were somehow active. They started doing presentations. One, I think two of them presented at Glitch at some point, Marcus Lichting and Stefan Klassen.
I remember Marco's presentation. I think he was doing a presentation with AstiDoc and Jeb, like taking the screenshots of Jeb and placing them in AstiDoc documentation, if I recall correctly.
That was Stefan, but yes.
That was Stefania, sorry. But yeah, that was an awesome presentation. If anyone is interested in creating documentation with which always stays up to date with the screenshots, and that's a presentation worth watching. I believe it's in the Glitch channel.
From 2 years ago, I believe.
I don't know if it's 2 or even 3 years ago,
Or
Andres.
two or
Maybe
three
it's
years ago,
three.
something like that. Yeah, it definitely is available in the YouTube channel.
Andres is also Java rockstar and a Java champion. How did you become a Java champion or a Java rockstar? What's the story there, Andres?
Well, Java 1 Rockstar, that is based on boats. So you go to Java 1 and do a presentation, and eventually the attendees will vote based on feedback survey. And those that receive the most votes in that particular year will get this award. And so I got it back in 2010. And as Java champion, what we have is a series of guidelines of what would constitute someone to be nominated as a Java champion. It's basically a recognition of someone that is very active in the Java community or the JVM community, I will say, nowadays. Someone that contributes to open source projects or collaborates in education and writes tutorials, articles, someone that really wants to help the Jekyll community. And that's exactly how I became a Java champion, because after so many years, since 2006, I believe, I started to contribute a lot to Java and Groovy open source projects.
Yeah, you are giving a lot of talks as well, right? How many talks do you give a normal year?
It depends. My busiest year was 2017 with 45 different events.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Now, being a developer advocate, probably that's going to keep the pace, I guess.
Well, yeah, we definitely have a series of events lined up. It's not just regular conferences, but also customer events and Java user group meetups. And we also have some internal and external events lined up for Gradle, which goes without saying that if anybody that is listening is interested in me presenting, whether it's remotely or in person at your company or your user group, just drop me a note and I'll be very happy to arrange it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's he's an awesome speaker. If anyone has the opportunity to see his talks, that's a great thing to do. You have been involved, as you said, contributing to Java and Groovy a lot. I saw you became the lead of JSR 377.
Yes.
What is that? That's a specification, but what's the specification about?
This is when we start to come back again to Griffin. So JSRs are the way that you standardize certain APIs within the Java platform. And 377 is JSR for standardizing how we write desktop applications. Because of Griffin is not the only framework that exists out there, of course, to write such kind of applications. We have really small frameworks up to the really big platforms like NetBeans and Eclipse, RCP. And many of these frameworks offer you similar capabilities in their own way. So the idea behind JSR 377 is to standardize this API so that it will be much easier for you to move from one framework to the other, or to mix and match components written in one framework to use it in the other. And the reference implementation of JSR 377 will be the Griffin framework.
Which kind of components are those, like buttons, or
it will go beyond buttons, because the buttons will be strictly tied to a specific UI toolkit. But you can think, for example, of a composite widget. The typical widget is you have two lists, one side by side, and a couple of buttons in the middle, so that you can move elements from one list to the other. Mm-hmm. This is a very typical business-like widget that is not provided by any single UI toolkit. It's not provided by Swing nor JavaFX nor the others. But you can write a composite of using basic widgets and say, oh, now I have this multi-list widget, if you want to call it like that. And it will expose the proper API for this widget, how it should behave. Then it should be easy for it to hook it into different applications, even if they're using different implementing frameworks or the JSR 377 specification.
Yeah, that's cool. That how is the writing a specification? Is that really tough?
It takes some time. We do it via consensus. So there's at least one specification lead and multiple members of what is called an expert group. The specification lead is the one that has the final say on any decision, and the expert group are a series of people that can help the lead come up with the final specification document. Oftentimes, specifications under the JCP follow the very specific license called the GSPA. But in the case of JSR 377, besides this license, we also apply the Apache license. This allows anybody that is not part of the expert group to participate and give us their feedback, and if needed be, if they want, then also contribute some code. But if someone decides to contribute a lot of things, then we will definitely invite that person to be part of the expert group, because that gives a bit more of security to your contributions and a little bit more of decision power, if you will.
Yeah. Are you getting some help from other frameworks contributors? So I was writing the specifications.
We have members of the expert group coming from Eclipse, NetBeans, and a few other frameworks. So we're definitely keeping all our options open.
So are you optimistic that this specification will be adopted?
I certainly hope so, but first we have to finish it.
Okay.
We're in the middle of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, best of luck. I think it's great that many of the technologies that we are seeing right now are basically implementing specifications. I think that's, as you said, keeps the options open from migrating to from one tool to the other, and that's great. Another thing that you have been doing a lot and that's really related to open source is HackerGarten. Can you explain what HackerGarten is?
HackerGarten is a group of people that come together usually after hours, after working in your doing your daily work, and we work on open source projects. The difference from any regular hackathon is that on a hackathon you meet people, you learn skills, and then you throw away the code. In a HackerGarten, you don't throw away the code. What the real goal at the end of the session is that you commit back something that turns out to be useful to a particular open source community of your choosing. So at the beginning of the sessions, we usually throw out a few ideas into a whiteboard, and then we vote on the ideas we want to work on. So that's a way that we can figure out how we can split into different teams. And we do this for, I don't know, 3, 4, up to 5 hours, depending on the location, on how excited or tired we are. We eat some pizza, we drink beer, we have snacks, we have a good time. And it's a guarantee that no matter what, if you participate in a HackerGarten session, you will learn something new, whether that is a new IDE shortcut or a new tool or a new library. There's always something for you to learn, and also for you to teach other.
Yeah, that's awesome. Was this born in Basel originally, or?
Yeah, this was born in Basel. The initiative was created by Hamlet Darcy, and I joined I think 2 months after he started this thing. So I was there in the early years, and we have been so successful with HackerGarten that now we're running it in 4 different locations here in Switzerland: Basel, Lucerne, Lausanne, and Bern. We want to restart it in Zurich, so that we have a 5th location. And we also run it in other parts of the world and in other conferences. The one that has been the most successful is GreatCon Copenhagen, where the HackerGarten session reached up to 70 people. So that's 7-0. And the reason being is that the Groovy community is very open, is very friendly. And we have the project leaders in attendance. So we had Graham Rocher and Guillaume Lafourche and Jochen and Luke Daly and so many other people. So having regular attendees sitting side by side with one of these project leaders and just exchanging ideas is the best thing that you can have.
Yeah, I have been, I have attended one HackerGarten or two in Copenhagen. And yeah, as you said, that's awesome. Great atmosphere. And as you said, working with people of this caliber is a great opportunity for anyone. And the best thing is, as you said, there was code contributed back to open source from those sessions.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, that's a great idea. The website is hackergarten.net. Look for a meetup close to you, I guess.
And if not... Then feel free to reach out if you want to start your own version of HackerGarten. Then reach out to me and I'll let you know what are the steps and the guidelines to follow.
Yeah, I guess you created the logo for the website.
No, I didn't create it myself, but I asked for a designer to do it.
I say it because of the Mexico colors.
It's the funny thing is that you refresh the homepage, you will see that the banner changes. We have 4 different banners, and they are somehow linked to Mexico.
Cool thing. Like Easter eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool thing. So after Canoe, you left Canoe. I thought you left Canoe because you were building your own company or something like that with a couple of Canoe guys, or maybe I am completely mistaken.
Some people from Canoe, once they left, they created another company called Karakun. And as time passed by, people that left the company, from one, they moved to the other.
Okay. And after Karakun, is that job before Gradle or?
No, there is another company in between called Trivadis, which is a consultancy company, much bigger than Canoe, pretty much in the same business. And this is where I did another Griffin-based application for a big customer. And as time passed, things were going fine, but then suddenly the contact came with Gradle, and the opportunity was there. And I said, well, looks like it's a really good opportunity, so I better take it.
Yeah, I think, from the outside, you have been involved with, I have seen Gradle talks given by you for many years already. So you have been always an enthusiastic about the technology for a long time. So I remember a talk for you about, I believe it was called like Gradle Galore, like a collection of Gradle plugins. I think you have been involved, and I know you have written many Gradle plugins as well yourself for a long time.
Yeah, at some point, some people thought for many years that I used to work for Gradle instead of Canoe.
Yeah, you see.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes complete sense. You were so involved in the plugins ecosystem that I think you are a perfect fit for them. So you joined on January, almost the first month there. How are things looking?
Well, I couldn't be happier. Things are developing very fast. Once you are inside Gradle, you see things in a different light. There are so many things to learn to do inside the company. And I'm very quite excited because, as you mentioned, I've been involved with the technology since almost since the inception. I saw one of the earlier versions of Gradle back in this was called the 2GX experience in 2008, February, in Reston, Virginia, the precursor of what became the Spring 1 2GX conference. And at that time, Gradle was very close to end, but using Groovy, so kind of like a different version of what used to be Gantt. And I was completely confused by the tool, but as time passed by, I found it very, very useful and very flexible, which is what I like. And I found my way around it, and there's always new things that were added, new features, and there were some compatibility breakages here and there. And so I know the history of the tool from the outside as a regular user or as a power user. And I'm quite excited to be now in the inside so that I can see, I have more, a different perspective of what's going on with the different teams that work within the company and the different products that are created by the company. And I cannot say much right now, but I'm really, really excited of what's coming up in the future.
Yeah, you are working with Gradle Enterprise, I guess, now. Did you work with Gradle Enterprise before joining Gradle?
No. So for those that do not know, Gradle has a couple of products out there. You probably are mostly aware of the free product or the open source product, which is the Gradle Build Tool. But Gradle also offers a commercial product called Gradle Enterprise, which is it's a tool that can hook into the Gradle Build Tool and give you higher capabilities such as the build cache, which is a feature that was added a couple of releases ago, but this will give you a remote build cache. So this definitely speeds up your builds a lot, and historical records for your build scans and a few other things. And if you allow me, they're just recently they announced the Maven support for the Gradle Enterprise. So what does this mean? This means that it doesn't matter if you use the Gradle build tool or the Maven build tool. If you want to have faster builds, then the Gradle Enterprise is your option.
Yeah, I think you, because you have a lot of Maven knowledge as well, so I think you are the perfect asset for Gradle Inc. to pitch some Maven clients to use Gradle Enterprise. I guess many people inside Gradle are regretting right now the name Gradle Enterprise. to be something more like build enterprise, to be more build agnostic. But yeah, I think it's a great move to support Maven. I think it Maven users will benefit whether they change to Gradle or they stay in Maven, just from the fact of using Gradle Enterprise. I saw that you have like a free webinar January the 23rd, I believe, which is
yeah, that, yeah. Today, the day we are recording this is in the evening, and I believe that recording will be available later. So that if somebody cannot make it today, I don't know when this podcast will be published, but in any case, the recording should be available later for your view pleasure.
Yeah. Are you going to be involved in pitching Gradle for Maven users, or do you see that as part of your job?
Well, my job is to make sure that developers have a really, really good experience developing whatever they need to develop. So have what is called build happiness and developer productivity. This could mean, well, right now we're targeting the build space, but developer productivity is very broad. So for now, whatever is necessary for someone to have a much better build experience, that's what we're going to do. If this means that it's a Gradle Enterprise or it's Gradle Build Tool or it's something else, then that will really remain to be seen, but we will continue to push into that direction to make sure that developers have a much better experience when writing software and making ends meet.
Yeah, I think the thing that, so this is my bet for the future. I think Gradle will release equivalent to Travis, something like a continuous integration server specialized in Gradle builds. You heard here first. That will make sense for Gradle, right? Andres, what do you think?
We'll have to come back to that prophecy.
Okay.
Later in the year.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think it will be great. We are building all the Micronaut and Grails applications in Travis. And I see a lot of benefit in having a specialized Gradle continuous integration server. So if you can pass this message to the decision chain, I appreciate it.
Okay. That's exactly part of my job. Listening to users, listening to developers, figure out what they're missing or where they're stuck, where are the pains, so that we can come up with an option in our products so that we can relieve those pains and give you, again, better developer productivity.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Another thing that maybe you cannot answer me, but are there any plans for the plugin portal?
In which sense?
In the sense of, I am having some difficulties in, so right now if you search for something really like, I don't know, like versions, they are like a gazillion plugins. So there is no way to see like what plugin is more popular, what plugin, I don't know. The Gradle plugins, there are so many Gradle plugins right now, which is great, that the serendipity is tough. I don't know if that's your experience as well, but my experience is, sometimes it's tough to see which is the good plugin to use.
I completely agree with you. As an external user, I always get in trouble trying to search for Git or, as you say, versions, because this matches pretty much anything that has a version on it. Yeah, the search could be greatly improved. And there are a few other things that will probably give you a social aspect. If you remember, you recall the Grails plugin of all days, it had the ability for rating a plugin.
Yep.
And linking to the social profile of the author. And you can form an author, you can navigate to other plugins that person has authored, and so many other things, right? I really hope that we can add something like that. There may be some plans to update the Gradle plugin portal, but I cannot tell you right now exactly which direction we'll go.
Yeah. In Grace, what we are doing is, so we are checking BinTray, and we are checking from BinTray the GitHub page of the plugin, and we are collecting the starts from GitHub. Probably it's not a perfect metric, but it's one metric to check the popularity of a plugin. If that's of any use for the Gradle guys. But yeah, I hope to see some improvements there. Another thing that maybe you... I am taking my chance to do all the Gradle questions. Have you worked with Android Studio yourself?
No, I have not.
Okay. Android Studio has one really nice feature, which I believe it's, I don't know if it's powered by the Android Gradle plugin or is the IDE itself. It's that if you are using a dependency that there is a newer version, the IDE will tell you so. It will basically prompt you to upgrade all the time your build. I don't know if that's only possible because probably the integration with the partnership with Gradle and the Google Fox and IntelliJ to release Android Studio or something like that. But that's a great feature. I saw many talks from you where you recommended the use of versions, a plugin to basically check if your build is out of date, because normally you will benefit not only from like features but also for like security fixes and stuff like that.
Yes.
So yeah, some of those features will be nice in IntelliJ. Some of those features will be nice.
Well, there is a great plugin. So besides versions, which is the one that I like, that it only tells you if it tells you if your dependencies or your Gradle plugins or even your Gradle version is up to date or not, or what will be the next potential jump if you want it. There is two other plugins that you can check for when you mentioned security. One of them is the OSS index from Sonatype. This will check all the dependencies of your project and tell you if there are any security violations or any CCBs, and will list them, each one of them. And the other one is coming from another company called Snyk, which they have their own database of security vulnerabilities, which is somehow mixed with the one from OSS Index. I mean, they're coming from similar places, but also separate. The point is that you have choices. Whether
so
you want to use one of
the
SNYK.
Okay, I have it in front of me. I will include a link in the show notes. If anyone is interested in a good list of Gradle plugins, I believe you have. I know for sure because I link from the newsletter to that. Andres has a curated list of recommended Gradle plugins. I will include a link in the show notes as well.
This is a repository called Awesome Gradle Plugins. I think it contains like 40 or 50 plugins for now. Not that many. It's on a GitHub repository under my name. Yeah. But I also have a handful of presentations on SlideShare under my name also that describe different plugins or a set of different plugins. One of them is the one that you mentioned, the Gradle Plugins Galore. I believe this is the second version of the talk that has, or this is, I think it's the second season of the talk. So you'll definitely find plenty of documentation on the plugins that I personally recommend for many of the usual tasks and other plugins depending on your environment, such as, for example, connecting to secure shell servers that use Sugar plugin or Docker, of course, now is very popular. Also, if you allow me, in recent months I've been working on another series of plugins called the Cordem Gradle plugin set.
I wanted to, because Andres will be a keynote speaker in Gridge and he will give me a workshop about how to use the family of, first of all, where does the name Cordem comes from?
Cordem is... this comes back from my college days. We're a group of friends that at some point we wanted to create our own company. And because the way that we did things, our code in that time was done with C and C++, it crashed constantly and generated a core dump.
Okay.
So we use that. And so it's kind of it's core dump. Sounds very similar to core dump. And that's how things came to be.
Yeah, it's a really funny story about the name.
So I kept the name alive And I use it in many of my projects, but in this particular set of plugins, one of the things that I have heard across the years is that even though Gradle is very flexible and allows you to do many, many things, if you're coming from Maven, you will expect certain structure that is very rigid. Hello?
Yeah,
okay.
We lost the
So,
audio
yeah.
for a moment.
Right. So if you're coming from Maven, you will expect a very rigid structure, so that it will be easy to follow from one project. You cannot have this with Gradle from by default, but you can if you write a series of plugins that give you that particular structure. And this is exactly what this suite of plugins give you: a structure that is still flexible to your needs, but also rigid. So that you, if you want to do the same things as in Maven, then just apply the plugins and there you go.
Yeah, so if anyone listening to the podcast ever wanted to share any, wanted to create a library and open source the library, basically the plugins, correct me if I am incorrect, but basically will give you a heads up to create the structure necessary, like to where to put the code, where to place the documentation, how to release the code to bin tray, how to integrate like static analyzers, or I believe find my bugs or plugins like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to publish a library or a project to Maven Central, you have to follow certain rules. The POM file has to have certain elements that are not added by default when you apply the Maven Publish plugin in Gradle. You also have to publish source and javadoc jars, which is not that difficult to do this in Gradle. It's a handful of lines, but you have to copy and paste these lines all over the place where you need to use in different projects. Maven also generates a handful of metadata files in the dataInf directory, the POM XML and POM properties, which these plugins, the Cordant plugins, will also generate for you. I call it the MinPOM. In terms of code coverage, well, Gradle supports Jacoco from the get-go, but it doesn't give you any aggregate reports. Again, it's easy to configure this if you know what you need to do. It's a handful of lines, and you have to duplicate these lines all over the place. So the advantage of a plugin system like the one that Gradle offers you is that if you write a plugin, then just apply it in any projects. So all the different things that you will think you'll find for free or are pre-configured or predefined in Maven in one way or another that you might be missing in Gradle, then these plugins will give you for you out of the box.
Yeah, so Cordam Gradle plugins plus Gradle Enterprise, and you are good to go to migrate from Maven to Gradle.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, no, I am really, so I discovered your plugins because I discovered the plugins while I was searching for a Gradle plugin to count lines of code. And I think it's a really great idea. I think it, we don't need to reinvent the wheel all the time. And if we want to focus on writing the code to solve a problem, all this infrastructure, things related to the build should be in plugins. We trust Andres to write great plugins. So yeah, check them out if you want to. Griffon uses, so some of the ideas from the core dump, like the sub-project structures and this stuff, this is really influenced by Griffon, right?
Yes, exactly. So you mentioned the stats plugin. This is funny because it is based on the original stats command from Grails.
Yeah.
And when we moved Griffon to Gradle, we were missing this one. So I created a Gradle plugin for calculating in the stats, and we extended it so that it not only contain will be able to count Java and Groovy files, but also Scala, Clojure, Kotlin, HTML, ASCII, so many different ones, and it's pluggable as well. So if there's a new format that you somehow want to count, then just hook the counter, and there you go.
Yeah. So one thing that one feature request for you is the license plugin. So you are relying on a third party plugin,
yes,
which doesn't check the licensing files in Kotlin files in .kt files.
Really? It does not?
Yeah, that's not. At least in Android project, it doesn't work. So, yeah, feature request for you.
Okay, well, we have to contact the original author then. And if it's not there, then this is a nice contribution for someone.
From a hacker garden.
Wants to get in, yeah, exactly. If someone wants to get into open source and you happen to be close to a hacker garden meeting, then just hop along. And if it's not, then don't worry, still do it. If you can reach to us, any of the Groovy members, online, whether on Twitter or on the mailing list. And if you want to know more how to write these kind of plugins, how to get an open source, we always have our door open.
Yeah. Really don't hesitate to contact people in the Groovy community. It's, as Andres said, it's a really, really welcoming community. We have been talking almost for an hour, Andres. I don't want to steal more time from you. Would you like to plug anything else?
So I just remind you again that so many different options for people to get in touch with the Groovy community. Sergio, thank you very much for the podcast. Go to the Groovy community website, which is groovy-lang.org. You can reach us on the mailing list, on Twitter. I don't know if we have an IRC or Gitter channel for that. There are so many different ways. Also, if you're interested on desktop or JavaFX, definitely have a look at Griffin. And if you have build pains with Gradle, reach out to me. This is one of the things that I would like to do to make sure that you have a much better experience building projects. And if you want and to give it a try to Gradle Enterprise, you certainly won't be disappointed.
Yeah. A last thing is Andres will be in Greece. So in Greece 2019. March 28th to March 30th. So don't miss Gritch this year. Come and see Andres' workshop about the CoreDAMP Gradle plugins, his keynote, and have the chance to talk to him in person. Please visit Gritch, buy tickets, support the conference any way possible. And speaking about conferences, the call for papers for GRConf Copenhagen is closing by as well. I think it's the 31 of January, the last day. So another great conference. So if you, if you are a speaker and want to talk and share knowledge, that's another great conference to talk. I don't have anything else, Andres. I would like to thank you for taking the time. I would like to thank everyone for listening, and see you the next time.
See you next time. Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.